Good afternoon, folks, and welcome. It's time to break free. I will be your host for the hour, David Matthew Rock, coming to you live from the constitutional carry state of Arizona via the Patriot broadcast from the trenches, 89.5 FM, Chiloquin, the state of Jefferson. Simulcast on IndianaFreedomTalkRadio.com, the Grow Your Own channel, 107.5 FM, Greenville, South Carolina, Hal Apino's channel, 87.9 FM, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and many more micro-broadcasts and webcasts heard around the world. Take the time to check out the number one source for Patriot news on the web at FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com. If you'd like to contact me via email, I can be reached at DavidMatthewRock@gmail.com. This is a live call-in program. Come on up and share your thoughts and experiences. Unlike the mainstream media, listener participation is appreciated. The call-in number is 641-715-3610. Once connected, you'll be asked for the conference room number, which is 220029 in the pound sign. Hit star 6 to unmute. All right, it is 1:02 p.m. Arizona Mountain Time. It is 96 degrees in Casa Grande, Arizona, mostly sunny with 29% humidity. We're going to start today with an oration on the William Morgan Affair, read by 33rd degree Mason Tom Crowell. William Morgan's disappearance and presumed murder in 1826 ignited a powerful movement against the Freemasons. We will get into it as soon as we return from these messages from our sponsors.
Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disastrous situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just the conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
Divergent Flavor Labs introduces our all-original e-juice flavor line made from pure 100% kosher USP food-grade ingredients. Whether it's our flavored tobaccos like Calypso or our amazing bakery flavors like Crumbiliumptious, Divergent Flavor Labs' handmade all-original flavor line will never disappoint. Available exclusively through VaporRebellion.com.
Thank you for listening to PBFTT.
Patriot Broadcast from the Trenches, 89.5.
Micro FM.
Chiloquin, the state of Jefferson.
It's time to break free, live on PBFTT, August 24th, 2017. I'm your host, David Matthew Rock. Thank you for joining me this afternoon. Okay, so we're going to get into an oration on the William Morgan affair, read by 33rd degree Mason Tom Crowell. So this took place right in the area where I grew up in Rochester, New York. So to me, there's a little bit of added interest, but this is quite an interesting topic, and we'll get into it right now.
Our presentation tonight is entitled The William Morgan Affair, The Incident and Its Consequences. In the years following the Revolutionary War, the state of New York became a contrast of cultures. The eastern half of the state was enjoying economic prosperity. New York City was fast becoming the largest city and cultural center for this new nation. Also, the area referred to as upstate or up the Hudson River to Albany was certainly flourishing. The western part of New York, the area west of the Catskills and the Adirondack Mountain Range, is the area we're talking about. And it was just the opposite. It was largely an agricultural-based economy, and it was suffering. The people, mostly uneducated, were poor and superstitious. They were religiously inclined, but a parade of evangelists through the years had seemed to get them all mixed up. No less than five religious groups were started in this area of western New York during these days, including the Mormon sect. Masonry was also well received by this group, this area, and it had grown rapidly. Back in 2010, when I did a presentation on the northern and the southern jurisdictions of the Scottish Rite and their beginnings, you may recall that the area we now call the northern jurisdiction was in disarray during these years, as there were two supreme councils competing against each other, the Bidadid group and the Serano group. The infighting was quite ruthless, which made for a bad view of Masonry by the general public. So, this is a quick look at the landscape of western New York State in the 1820s. It was fertile ground for unrest, religious, political, and fraternal. The principal character of our story tonight is William Morgan. Let's take a look at this character, William Morgan. He was born in Culpeper County, Virginia in 1774. He worked as an apprentice stonemason and followed that trade when and where the work was available. He paid more attention to the bottle than he did to his trade, and his family, he and his family, were always needy and seeking help from others. At the age of 51, he arrived in Batavia, New York. That was the year of 1825. He claimed to be a master mason, and he signed a petition requesting membership in the Royal Arch Chapter. Unfortunately, he was initiated in that area of York Rite Masonry. Now, no records have ever been found showing that he had received the Blue Lodge degrees. Now, proper records were not always kept, and many were destroyed by fire back in those days, so that's not that unusual a situation. But this is still somewhat of a mystery. Morgan, shortly thereafter, Morgan had joined with a couple of other men, non-Masons, and purchased a printing press. He seemingly already had a plan in mind to make money. As mentioned, he became a Royal Arch Mason in May of 1825 in a small city about 20 miles from Batavia named Leroy, New York. Shortly thereafter, the Royal Arch Masons who lived in Batavia petitioned requesting a Royal Arch Chapter be established in their city. Unpopular with some of the Batavia Masons, Morgan was irritated by the removal of his name from that petition, and also because he was denied employment on the construction of a new Masonic temple in that general area. Now, most people believe that he was motivated by more than revenge for these slights. even though he did receive some of these slights from the fraternity. He was wanting to make big bucks from printing and selling the secrets of Masonry. A fire in the printing shop was blamed on the Masons. It did minimal damage. Morgan was then arrested for a debt and was jailed in Canandaigua, New York, in September of that year. The next day, four Masons appeared at the jail, discharged his debt, and escorted Morgan to an awaiting carriage. What happened to Morgan following his abduction remains an unsolved mystery to this day, 190 years later. No trace of his corpse was ever found. Some 69 Masons involved in his removal, either in the action or knew about it, told this story. Supposedly, they had arranged with Canadian brothers to set him up on a farm in Ontario, where he would quietly remain for the rest of his life. Basically, they were going to give him a new life, a new identity, kind of like the Federal Witness Protection Program used in the infiltrating crime syndicates of later years. Anyway, this was supposedly their plan. Something went wrong. There was courtroom speculation that he was bound with weights and thrown in the Niagara River below the falls. Now, this was 1825, so in the next 5 years, listen to this, 20 grand juries were called. 54 Masons were indicted. 39 were brought to trial. Of those, 10 received convictions and jail terms of from 30 days to 28 months was the longest. The convictions were not for murder, but for abduction. Of the 10 Masons convicted, only 6 actually participated in Morgan's removal. The whole affair was done, of course, to forestall the publication of a book called Illustrations of Masonry, which was the expose, supposedly going to be the expose on Masonic secrets. Now, to their embarrassment, the Masons' embarrassment, this book was actually published 3 months after Morgan's disappearance. So really, they didn't accomplish anything. The book was already underway, evidently. What is amazing is that neither group, Morgan and his printer friends on one side and the local Masons on the other, neither group were aware that some 30 Masonic exposés had previously been published in English since 1723. So this was not going to be something that was going to be great like they thought. What a shame. The printers made no money, and the Masons created a national scandal. The American public was shocked by the charges that Morgan was supposedly murdered by Masons. Newspaper articles screamed that the jurors were all Masons. The law enforcement officers were all Masons. The local newspapers were quite silent, as they were Masons. No wonder major penalties were not passed out, so they said. They charged that Masons had more allegiance to their fraternity than to the law of the land. In the decade after William Morgan's abduction, actually, the period was more like 1826 to 1842. Anti-Masonic sentiment raged like a brush fire, spreading into politics and giving birth to a third political party, the Anti-Masonic or Anti-Masonry Party. Now, this was the first third party in American political history. Previous to this, we either had just the one or two applying against each other. This was the third. Let me expand for just a moment on the political parties in the United States. Originally, there was just the Federalist Party which really was just a group surrounding the original power structure of George Washington. Thereafter came the Democratic Republican Party, sometimes referred to as the Jeffersonian Party. In the 1820s, this Democratic Republican Party had evolved into what we now know as the Democratic Party. And the Whig Party had appeared on the scene, represented people with contrasting view of politics. Now, this was the political climate when the anti-Masonic Party appeared after the Morgan incident drew nationwide attention. An intriguing side note, the new political party was the first party, this new anti-Masonry party was the first party to employ a nominating convention for the selection of a presidential candidate. The other two major parties, of course, in succeeding years, promptly followed their example. And, of course, now the nominating convention process is just a standard procedure in our political world. The presidential election of 1832 was the anti-Masonic Party's first presidential campaign. The candidate was a former attorney general from the state of Maryland named William Wirt, W-I-R-T, Wirt. He was the candidate for the anti-Masonry party. Another interesting side note, listen to this, he ran against two other people, of course, two other parties. He ran against Henry Clay, a former Grand Master from Kentucky, and also against incumbent President Andrew Jackson, a former Grand Master from Tennessee. So the presidential election of 1832 was really centered around Masonry. You had two former Grand Masters, and then the anti-Masonic Party had formed and was active. Even though the anti-Masonry party died out after the 1836 election, which was the next one down the line, it left its mark on the country, particularly in the northern and middle Atlantic states. Since the beginning of Masonry, this fraternity has had its critics and enemies. So the demise of the anti-Masonry political party and movement did not mean the end of anti-Masonry sentiment in the United States. It was with us before, and it's still present today. In this instance, anti-Masonry failed as a political movement, but succeeded as a social movement. Masons were not held in high regard there for a few years. Many churches actually banned Masons. If you were a Mason, you couldn't join that particular denomination. Masonic membership took a hit. The state of New York went from 480 lodges in 1826 to 75 lodges in 1835. Massachusetts dropped from 108 to 56 lodges. And the Grand Lodge of Vermont actually went out of existence because they didn't have any lodges that were active. The low point in membership then came in the year 1840, after which the fraternity slowly regained its numbers and prominence, but it was slow. This all occurred because a group of Masons with supposedly good intentions of protecting their beloved fraternity went too far. They stepped over the line of right and wrong. Perhaps we can look upon this era of national upheaval against Masonry in another perspective, which I think was actually positive. It pushed Masonry into the private life sector and somewhat away from the political scene. If Masonry had continued to grow at the rate that it had just previous to this incident, it would have probably gone into a national political power. And if that would have happened, you know what would have happened to our fraternity. Corruption would have set in, and our core values would probably have suffered. Even 100 years later, In the huge Masonic membership explosion of 1900 to 1925, we've kept an arm's length with politics. After researching this subject, I made two personal observations. These are Tom's observations, not some learned Masonic scholar. So take them as you will. One, the first one, all Masonic bodies in all their activities, basic masonry plus all the higher degrees, shrine included, must make sure that they do not cross the line of breaking the law, regardless of what the minor laws, major laws, or whatever, because we are still vulnerable to public opinion. Secondly, when we are attacked by outsiders, whether they have good cause or are saying untruths, we must try to set the record straight in a low-key manner and not return fire with fire. So this has been a look at the William Morgan affair and its aftermath, a major mistake by a few that affected many.
And that's it, folks. I found this to be quite interesting. It seems that this is a very important part of American history that is just pretty much not being discussed at all. It's just shoved right in the memory hole. And the fact that, he called it the inauguration process? Well, where they have the rallies. What are they called again? Where they picked the presidential candidate. The fact that that was created under the anti-Masonic party, and our first third party was an anti-Masonic party, yet this is not general common knowledge. I mean, some people in New York know it. I'm sure people listening to my voice probably know it a little bit because of their studies, but the average person does not know this. This does not come up on Fox News, and they're probably not teaching it, and I guarantee they're not teaching it in public school, and they might not be teaching it in the colleges, so I thought it was important to bring that up and share it with everybody. Now, yesterday when I was kind of talking about my political views, I drew a blank. And what I was trying to get at, what I was trying to express when talking about government and how I feel about government, I use the word anarchist to kind of explain my viewpoints. I don't really like the word. The core element of my view on government is quite simple. All rules come from ownership. You know, I own my body. You know, I own my life's time. I own my property. Therefore, I get to make all the rules. And I don't believe that any man owns my body, my time, my property, none of it. Therefore, no man can make a rule over me. You know what I mean? And I can't make a rule over them. If they don't want me on their property, they tell me to leave, and I leave. Otherwise, I'm trespassing, and vice versa. So, you know, I mean, how do we – is it even possible to build a government with that concept of all rules come from property ownership? I don't really know. I do see the value in having a way to go to court and handle things without bonking each other on the skulls. So do I believe in no government whatsoever? I can't really say that, but I will say that it doesn't matter what you put in place. The psychopaths, the people that want power, the people who are willing to sell out their own mother for a dime, they're going to gravitate to these positions of power. So anytime that you create a position of power, expect the corruption. It's only a matter of time. So my kind of standpoint on that is, say we win and we scrape the table clean, as Kornke likes to put it, and the table's clean, right? Whatever we put in place to replace this tyrannical, evil, disgusting government that we currently have, we need to be very careful about it, because those same enemies that are entrenched in this government and the same people we're going to be fighting on the battlefield are going to be trying to get right back in and start the whole game all over again. And that was probably, most likely, one could say probably definitely, what happened after the American Revolutionary War. The same power brokers, the same people are trying to dominate and oppress and make something from nothing by, taxing us, got into positions of power and maintained. And sometimes they go underground and sometimes they're right out in the open. It is what it is on that. So I want to take a second to encourage our listeners to be news hounds, okay? If you see something going on in your area, go film it. If you're seeing an article in your local publications and it's not coming out on a national scene and you think it's important, go ahead and send it to FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com. Now, I made a press badge that you can see on the right-hand side of FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com. So if there's one of these free speech rallies where they got the Antifa people there and all that, and you desire to go film it, you can print out one of these press badges and do it in such a way where the cops might not mess with you because they'll think that you're press. I mean, there's no guarantee to any of that. And if you click that banner for the press badge, it'll open up, and one of our good friends, Mary, will print it out for you and laminate it. You just send her the photo and a certain amount of money, and she'll print it out and laminate it for you. So anytime if there's any of these events cooking off in your area, please go out down there and take a look and film and send it to us. We need to give the media a run for their money. We need to be more honest, more entertaining, more helpful, just a better product in general to get the people on board, you know? And in some ways, unfortunately, we kind of have to emulate them because people have been conditioned. Anyway, let's see here. I had a couple other notes. Well, okay, so I have this one article. It's posted on FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com. It's coming from Engadget. It's titled, Google Search Uses a Medical Quiz to Help Diagnose Depression. And it's a short article, so we're just going to go ahead and read it before we reach our bottom of the hour break. Google is offering a verified test that could lead to treatment. Ooh, Big Brother himself. Only half of Americans who face depression get help for it, and Google is determined to increase that percentage. As of today, it's offering a medically validated anonymous screening questionnaire for clinical depression if you search for information on that condition. This won't definitively indicate that you are clinically depressed, to be clear, but it will give you useful information you can take to a doctor. And importantly, the very presence of the questionnaire promises to raise awareness and promote treatment beyond what a basic information card would offer. The questionnaire is part of a larger effort from internet giants to provide helpful and potential life-saving information to people with mental health issues. Facebook is testing artificial intelligence, AI, that can detect suicidal comments and make it easier to get help. What, like call the fucking cops on you? That's what I'm thinking. While its Instagram service recently started offering support to users when their friends report concerning posts. In many cases, they're concerned both about offering a helping hand as well as making sure that you get accurate information. Google and others are determined to fight fake news. Oh, you mean people like us that are coming up using your mainstream media articles and calling bullshit on them? And they know the consequences of false or incomplete medical information could be serious. If you need help, they want to be sure you get the appropriate support. And with that, we've reached our bottom of the hour break. We'll be back in about 8 minutes. Hang on tight with me.
I'm taking fight as
Old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disastrous situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just the conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
Divergent Flavor Labs introduces our all-original e-juice flavor line made from pure 100% kosher USP food-grade ingredients. Whether it's our flavored tobaccos like Calypso or our amazing bakery flavors like Crumbiliumptious, Divergent Flavor Labs handmade all-original flavor line will never disappoint. Available exclusively through VaporsRebellion.com.
Thank you for listening to PBFTT,
Patriot Broadcast from the Trenches, 89.5
Micro FM,
Chiloquin,
the state of Jefferson.
Take me on.
It's Time to Break Free is a listener-sponsored broadcast. If you'd like to help keep this program on the air, go to FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com and hit that donate button. Or you can mail donations to Henry Shively at Post Office Box 964, Chiloquin, Oregon 97624. Your contributions are appreciated. It is 1:39 p.m. Arizona Mountain Time. I'm your host, David Matthew Rock. And that was Gamma Ray with A While in Dreamland. And I had to do everything within my power not to turn the mic up and start singing along there. One of my favorite songs, actually. So I heard a caller coming up before we went to the break. Are you still there? Well, at any time, feel free to interrupt me and come on up.
Yeah, I'm here. I was just going to say that
hold on 1 second, Mark.
Idiot.
Okay. Hold on a second, Mark. You got a lot of background noise coming through. Could you roll your window up or whatever you need to do? There's just a ton of white noise, and it's very difficult to hear you.
My window is up. I'm not moving.
Okay.
Somebody else on the line. I'll call you back.
Okay, yeah, it sounds like wind. But, yeah, call back, interrupt me, feel free, whatever it takes. Okay, so we're going to start out with an article from the Jerusalem Post. It's posted at FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com for discussion. It's titled, 19 Israelis to have citizenship revoked for fighting with ISIS. And I found this article to be quite interesting. A lot of people in our camp have theorized that ISIS is Israeli secret intelligence service, and it just may be. And I would assume that pretty much most of these articles you're getting out of the mainstream are half-truths, so you have to read between the lines. But let's go ahead and do some reading between the lines here and see what we can come up with. 19 Israelis to have citizenship revoked for fighting with ISIS. Some 60 Israeli citizens have traveled to Syria or neighboring Iraq to fight with rebel groups, including the Islamic State. The Interior Ministry has begun the process of revoking the citizenships of 19 Israelis. Did you want to come up, Mark?
Is that any better?
It's a little better. Go ahead.
Okay, well, that's okay. I'll stay off. Apparently, there's a lot of noise. I'll just stay off.
No. Before, we were hearing wind, and now it's just a little bit of white noise. It's not bad. So, go ahead. Or not. You can come up anytime. The noise wasn't as bad as it was previously, so come on up.
Okay. If you fill out that Google questionnaire for depression, you're an idiot. I mean, those people are like evil, man. They're going to use that to screw us all in another way somehow. I mean, clinical depression, you go to a damn doctor. You don't go to Google, that's for damn sure. You know, it's crazy to go to Google.
Well, the way
most people,
the way I'm thinking, they're telling on themselves. I don't think the test means anything. I think they're just kind of letting everybody know, hey, yeah, we're watching you, and we're mapping your mind, you know? So that's the way I'm looking at it. I don't think they give a shit whether you fill it out or not. They're sitting there measuring the milliseconds between your clicks on a web page, okay? They're measuring...
Exactly.
Yeah, thousands of data points and then putting it down on their hard drives and whatnot. And I'm sure people like us are highly studied. For them to figure out how they can tune their propaganda to make us move in one direction or another, I'm sure is quite important to them. So, yeah, I'm sure they
right. You want to get rid of depression, don't drink fluoride, don't breathe the air, don't eat the food. And then maybe then you won't have depression until they fix all that. And don't breathe, don't drink. They got us coming and going. I mean, depression's just a byproduct now of just waking up and living your life.
Well, and a lot of things is it's where you choose to put your energy. We all have thoughts, we all have feelings, and they kind of manifest on their own to a degree. Sometimes you really can't control the manifestation of a thought or a feeling. It's what you choose to do with that thought or feeling that matters. You can dwell in a depressed state. You can think, woe is me. Or you can make a choice and say, well, look, this is too big for me to change. I can do what I can. I can get around it as best as I can. But I really only know for a fact that I have this one life. So what's the point in sitting around feeling sorry for myself? When you start looking at some of the people in this world, they've gone through so much. And some people are just survivors and they make beautiful souls. You know, the more that somebody has gone through, the more trials and tribulations somebody has gone through, and that they've been able to push through it and continue to love themselves and love their family and strive for success no matter what is put upon them, they make some of the best people. So yeah, it's don't dwell in a depressed state. You know, take that energy and turn it around into something better. Do you have something else to add, Mark?
I agree. Well, yeah, I agree. It's just a GMO, chemtrails, fluoride doesn't help. But I agree with you 100%. I mean, but they got us coming and going, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we live in a situation where one anonymous phone call will result in an armored personnel carrier and many more patrol vehicles full of officers coming to your house to extract you or kill you. If you resist, they will kill you. And that can happen on one anonymous phone call. And that's the situation that we live in. We're living underneath that system. And then when you account for the taxes and what CPS is doing, and then all of the real low-down dirty stuff that's going on that the media isn't really covering, that you may not be privy to, there's just a real dark energy out there. And one thing I can say for a fact, when I was living in Phoenix, and, you know, some people might think this is goofy, but to me it was palpable. Like, I could feel the stress. Living in an area with 3 million people in one county and being in the center of it, it was palpable. I mean, I don't know how else to explain it. And at any given moment, you could hear 10,000 tires rolling on the roadway, and it was just never quiet. And being out here right on the edge of open desert, I mean, even though I can still hear a little bit of road noise from I-10, I can actually see it. But I can see both Mount Lemmon and South Mountain at the same time, so you could see for miles. Anyway, but yeah, it's just so much nicer once you get out of the major metropolitan areas. You got less electromagnetic frequencies, you got less noise, and I kind of believe that there's a connection between things beyond what we can see. You know, almost like a sixth sense, something that we don't use every day, therefore we take it for granted. And it would be the same thing that would cause a mother to know when their child got hurt at school. You know, that mother will get a gut feeling, and she'll pick up the telephone and call the school. And this happens to everybody. This happens all the time. How it happens, why it happens, I don't know. So I think energies can affect us. If you got a large group living tightly together who are super stressed out, paying the bills, rushing off to a job they hate, in a bad marriage, and kids going to public school, and whatever you try to teach your children, they're being unlearned, you know, their manners and all that stuff, all these different stresses and all the people having those stresses simultaneously, it becomes like compounding and it affects everybody. So I don't know. I don't think.
Yeah, try being a truck driver stuck in traffic, dealing with assholes all day, dispatchers and four-wheelers out here, having to get stuff delivered on time, having to breathe all this shit that they're putting in the air. I'm right in the middle of it. I mean, you know, you want to talk about some fucking depression, buddy. I could write a book about it. I mean, going to a truck stop and look at all the drivers. They're all walking around like a bunch of zombies. Nobody's smiling. Total clinical depression. I mean, this is one of those jobs it'll kill you. I mean, you never smile, you're never at home, you're always pissed off. This is one of those jobs, brother, that'll put you in your grave real goddamned early. And, you know, I mean, I hate to admit it, I'm probably going to be one of them, but I mean, yeah, I hear you, man. The noise and the pressure, it just gets worse and worse and worse every year. There's too many goddamn people in America. They're letting too many in. And, you know, it just, it's horrible. It's a bad, it's just horrible, man. Our way of life has changed completely.
Well, something that we can employ as a solution is get the hell out of the city, okay? Us patriots can start to move out towards the country, move out to these rural areas. The criminal mastermind nutcases, they want to push us into a small, tight, condensed city. They want to have the driverless cars. They want to have cameras on the corners and all this bullshit. And what we need to do is boycott it. And boycotting it would be getting the hell out of their county or moving out to the outer edges of that county and getting away from those major metropolitan areas. The more we can be self-sustaining, the less we have a need for money. One of my beliefs on why property tax was put in is it forces you to participate in the Federal Reserve System. I'm sure there's many reasons for it. It's a payoff for all the local crooks, and it also gives them the ability to steal property, and it makes it so there's a chance to get your hands on something that might have just been inherited through the generations, but now because of the taxation, you have the ability to get your hands on it. Where was I going? What was the point I was initially trying to make? Okay, yeah, so it forces you, property taxes forces you to participate in the Federal Reserve System. I can't pay the county of Pinal, Arizona in carpentry. They won't accept it, okay? So I'm forced to go pile up this money and then send it to them once a year, or they send a gentleman over to my house to either extract me or kill me. Kill me if I resist. So if there was no such thing as property taxes, hell, man, move out to the country, buy your home. If you move to the right area, get your cattle growing, dig a pond, get your fish growing, get your fruit trees in there, you know, and then you're going to have more food than you know what to do with. You know, hunt some deer on top of that, and you're going to be living like a king. And nobody can take it away from you once it's yours. But once they have that, once they put the property tax in, now everybody is under that gun. You want to go ahead with your thoughts, Mark?
Yeah, well, I was talking to a driver the other day. He wants to move to Indiana and raise cattle. He's saying you buy calves and they grow up and they cost a fortune. You sell them for a bloody fortune. I mean, that's a real good idea to be on a farm and grow cattle. I mean, it's a pain in the ass, but it's a way to be free and not have to kowtow, no pun intended, I mean, you know, to anybody, and you make a lot of money. Cattle's one way, growing livestock and farming is one damn good way to make a good living. And I've heard that a lot from a lot of people.
Well, we need to be producers. And now what I'm doing with this show is I'm producing content. You know, I'm getting the truth out there. I'm producing. But food is one of the vehicles the enemy is going to use against us. It has been used all throughout antiquity. You can see it happening in Venezuela today. Food can be used as a weapon. Food can be weaponized. So producing food is drastically important. It's one of the central things with this patriot movement, this patriot community. We need to be producers. We need to have food security. And there's a lot of desire for organic foods. There's a lot of desire for clean foods. There's a lot of desire to get away from the pesticides and the hormones and all of that. And we can participate in that part of the market by producing, you know, start those fruit trees, get them going, you know, get that stone fruit in there, get those apples in there, citrus, wherever you're at, whatever will grow, get it in there, get it in place. It's long term. It's going to be producing every year. And worst case scenario, it drops onto the ground and rots and the insects and the birds eat it. You know, best case scenario, you're selling it, making a buck off of it, or you can dehydrate it or can it or whatever. We need to produce. And again, I'm going to push that press badge. We need to produce media. We need to produce content. We need to produce the news. We need to be the news. We need to be there throughout this whole conflict. And whatever it takes to survive, whatever the hell they're going to try to do to us on the internet, we need to keep pushing forward. It's drastically important. I really can't stress that enough. go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, but you got to do your homework. You got to do your homework, man, because if you go out and you buy land and you want to produce, what you got to do your homework on the government will come in and say you can't do that on this piece of land. You're too close to other people. Like if you want to do cows, they'll say, the wind's blowing into the populated areas. You can't do chickens or cows. You know, so you got to be out in the fucking middle of nowhere. You got to make damn sure you do your homework if you're going to produce any kind of cattle or chicken or anything like that, because the government will come in after you buy the land and they'll stick it to you. Oh, you can't do that here. And the people are complaining about the smell. So you got to go way out. You know, you got to make damn sure you got all your T's dotted and T's crossed, because there's all kinds of regulation, man. I mean, I hear what you're saying. But the regulation is ridiculous. You got to make sure. I mean, you got to be on a deserted island, to be happy with what you're doing if you're going to produce. It's too much goddamn regulation.
Well, as Mark Kornke says, ban the bureaucracy. So, yeah, the bureaucracy is part of the problem. They're passing laws blocking people from gardening in their front yard. So, yeah, you definitely do have to be careful. But another way to think about it is out of sight, out of mind. You don't necessarily have to, deal with the average public right on your own property. You can deal pretty much just with friends, family, and neighbors, or maybe even use a third party to get your wares to market. And we don't necessarily need to produce an incredible amount of food. We just need to produce a little bit more than what we need. And produce healthy, clean food. Like what I was thinking, I would like to grow some cattle, but I'd probably only grow a couple, try to bring a couple to slaughter a year at the most. I don't really want to have a big production. And what I'm planning on doing with my next property is moving out to the country. I do want to be out in the middle of nowhere to a degree. I want to be close enough to an expressway where I can get to a major metropolitan area if need be, but I definitely want to get a ranch-style property going. I want to do animal husbandry. I want to do an orchard, and depending on the environment, I want to raise some fish as well. I mean, there's nothing like having fresh-caught fish, never frozen. Love it. That was one of the things I liked about living in Florida. I lived in the Bradenton, Sarasota area, which is part of Manatee County, which makes up the southern landmass that makes up the mouth of Tampa Bay. And they had this one little restaurant, fishery, right on the Gulf. And it had something to do with that Perfect Storm movie. I think that might have been the actual port that they had left with that whole Perfect Storm movie, but don't quote me on that. And I used to love going there. I used to take all my dates. Every time I had a new date, I would go to this place. And for some reason, I can't even recall the name. But they had something called a blackened grouper sandwich. And if you've never had grouper before, unlike cod or something, it's not necessarily flaky. It doesn't, flake apart per se. But it's a white fish, and it's bland but rich tasting. It's very, like, buttery almost. And, I love it. And my next door neighbor is really big into fishing and whatnot. And even here in Casa Grande, we have a few ponds around the way. And I've been helping him prepare different things and teaching him how to cook fish and whatnot. So we've done blackened, we've done the scampi and fried catfish and just all that. Mwah! Love it. So that's another thing I'd love to do, and it's also a really good source of food. You know, if you're up in the northern climates and you got some running water, you can grow trout. And I don't think it takes very much to feed them per se, but I know if you start adding food to the mix, they grow up real big, real fast. And just like a fishery, you can put a series of gates in, so the bigger ones kind of get stuck in one area and they don't end up eating all the small ones. And again, you can have more food than you could ever want, and you're going to be eating like a king. And you can also use this as a barter system. You know, you want to get your next door neighbor to get his lawnmower over, his riding lawnmower, and mow your grass. Just, offer him a 6-pound brown trout. He might be more than willing to do it, So we need to be producers. We need to barter with each other. We need to dream a little bit. We need to think big. I think that's really important. One of the reasons I like that song I just played so much. But it looks like I'm not really going to have time to get into this article too deeply. But yeah, coming from the Jerusalem Post, they're claiming some 60 Israeli citizens traveled to Syria or Iraq to fight with rebel groups. They're claiming a process has begun to revoke the citizenship of 19 Israelis. So go ahead and check that out at FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com. There's also another good article coming from the Jerusalem Post, also at FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com. This one's titled, IDF Destroys Two Illegal EU-Funded Palestinian Schools. And to me, this just shows the mindset of the Jewish supremacist and the Jewish supremacist state. So basically, just because these Palestinians did not have permits, the Israeli Defense Force demolished these schools. So I think that says a lot about the Jewish supremacists and their mindset. I saw an article about a week or so ago where a Palestinian shot a Israeli border guard, a female. And if my memory serves me correct, they shot and killed the gentleman. But they went further than that. The IDF went and blew up his house, a concrete house. They drilled into the concrete and everything and put in chargers and blew it up. So that's the mindset of your enemy there. And with that, we've reached the bottom of the top of the hour, the end of the show. I appreciate our caller. I appreciate all our listeners. And join me tomorrow for another Oy Vey Friday. Later, folks.